Hey all, it's Evan Hill here of Real Hawk Talk. Super excited to talk to you about our good friends over at Burger Master. If you know anything about me, I crave burgers in my sleep. I do not mess around. Started in 1952, Burger Master is the best burger chain in Washington State. They have locations all over the Puget Sound in Aurora, Bellevue, Everett, Mill Creek, University, and Mount Vernon. Their fresh ingredients and classic drive-in experience make them the greatest burger chain in the state of Washington. Stop by Burger Master on your way home from a Seahawks game. You won't regret it.
Hey everybody, it's Brian. If you haven't noticed, it is absolutely nuts out there in the housing market. If you don't know exactly what you're doing and you don't have someone that you trust by your side to guide you through the process, good luck getting the home you want or getting the best price for the home you're selling. John Hurlbut at Altitude Homes is a guy I've known for years, over a decade, a friend and someone I trust implicitly. If you are in Pierce, South King, or Thurston counties, there is nobody better to help guide you through the real estate process right now. Go on over to altitudehomesteam.com/hawkblogger. Now, again, that's altitudehomesteam.com/hawkblogger. Sign up to contact John. He will help you with the process, and all referrals will result in a $1,000 donation from John and the Altitude Homes team to Ben's Fund. Everybody wins. Go in there, get your help, get your dream home, get the most money for your home. AltitudeHomesTeam.com/HawkBlogger.
Hey all, Evan Hill here of Real Hawk Talk. Super excited to talk to you guys about our good friend Blake Johnson of ManifestFit.com. Football season is quickly approaching, and it is a struggle to stay in shape while eating burgers and nachos. ManifestFit.com is your one, only true online personal training service with workout and nutrition programs specifically based on your needs. They work with clients all over the U.S., and what makes Blake and ManifestFit.com so unique is that they don't believe training should be a luxury item. Now's the time to start. Head over to ManifestFit.com, click on how to join, and fill out the form. Their team will get back to you ASAP and help you start building a healthier, happier, louder Seahawks fan.
The skyline is etched in my veins. You can never put that out, no matter how hard it rains.
Hello everybody and welcome to the 232nd episode of Real Hawk Talk. I am Brian Nemhauser. You can find me on Twitter at HawkBlogger, and we've got quite the show tonight. It has been a while since we've been here. We took last week off. We were, you know, a little gluttonous and needing a little bit of a break from each other mainly. But we couldn't be apart for long. We had to come back together. We've been across the globe. We've been doing all sorts of things. And frankly, it's time to bring this crew back together to talk about all things Seahawks, including what was a very disappointing result in Tampa Bay. We're also enough of the way through the season that we are going to talk about predictions. I'm already getting head shakes. It wasn't in Tampa Bay, I know, but it was in Munich. So it was an away game. Point being, it was a loss. It sucked. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about where we are relative to our predictions. We will even probably talk a little bit about what is becoming a tantalizing draft pick that might be coming the Seahawks way. And we'll get all of that in tonight. But before we do, let's bring in the crew. We will start with the people that have traveled the farthest before they arrived here. Dana O'Gorman at Dana OG on Twitter. How are you doing, Dana? Are you like recovered from what was a long, fun, I hope, and probably frustrating trip?
I've been home since very early in the morning on Sunday, and I'm still struggling with my sleep switch a little bit, but yes, it was a great trip. And honest to God, even with the loss, it was such a fun game, and it was, the people around were so fun, and it was just really enjoyable. And it very different from the London games. I actually really liked the game in Germany. I hope they do a lot more of them.
That's awesome. Well, I sympathize with the early wake-up call. I will say that that's actually my normal wake-up time that I have to go back to sleep again. So, you know, we're just more in sync than we've been in the past. Nathan, you also, also made the trip. You didn't just go to Munich. You also went to Florence. And did you go anywhere else besides those two spots?
No, we did three full days in Florence, took a train, had a train day. Got off the train and immediately went to the German Seahawkers party, which was awesome. And then had three full days in Germany, including the game and everything. So it was a blast. It was amazing. I'd never been to Europe before.
What?
I'd never been to Europe before.
That was your first time in Europe.
Does Iceland count as Europe? I don't know.
No. I don't think so.
Well, then what is
That's
it?
That's amazing. It's Iceland.
Iceland is the closest to Europe I had ever been. So, so that was, it was super cool. It was really awesome.
What was the German Seahawkers party like?
It was, Dana saved me from a 3-hour line because it wasn't clear that if you had tickets you could walk up to the door, but I she did Dana let me know ahead of time, so we got right in. It was super cool. I mean, it was packed, it was chaos, but like it was very organized chaos. It was for, you know, this is going to shock you, for Germany, it was extremely efficiently ran in terms of like you went up and you bought tokens for beer. And I thought it was going to be a nightmare because there were so many people trying to get a beer or something. But the waitresses would just come around and you give them a token, you tell them what they want. And like they were on top of it. The people that did the party, they got the wait staff to like wear Seahawk colored traditional German waitress clothes or whatever. I don't know, it's not lederhosen for women, I don't know what it is. And it was packed, man. It was it was really cool.
It seemed like a really fun atmosphere. It seemed like everything but the game was really fun, and eager to hear more about it. The last but certainly never the least person I'll bring into the show is Evan Hill at Evan Hill HB on Twitter. Evan, man, it's been eventful around you. Arizona's been in the news a fair amount, and some of it just for getting their asses kicked by the 49ers, or for getting their coach let go from a game in Mexico City for some unknown reason. But what's going on with you, dude? It's good to see you.
My life has been not as eventful, though, as going to Germany and spending time in Italy and Florence drinking wine. It's been on the home front here. Went to LA for a few days to spend some time with Josh. Going to LA again in a couple weeks for that Charger, for that that Rams game in 2 weeks. But I've been enjoying the bye, and it's been good, but uneventful.
Yeah, well, I'll be curious about that second trip. You know, I know you were not super impressed with the stadium the first time in terms of field advantage.
I've learned some things about going to SoFi, man. I did that once. Like, a beer is $19. Like, what? Like you want, like, a, what was it? What did we get? It wasn't, I don't remember if it was a 2 Coors Lights we did, 2 premium beer cans were like $39, and then I always tip, so I tipped, I think, like 18%, and, you know, it 2 beers was like late 40s, I think, or something like that. There were things I learned about going to SoFi for the first time that I will absolutely not be doing the second time.
Well, in the Munich Stadium, you get like a liter, my fingers, where are they? They're a big ass thing of beer for like $12. And it wasn't Coors Light. It was like, I don't know what it was.
Like
it was,
actually good beer?
Yeah, it was some German solid beer, yeah.
Man.
Oof, that sounds really appealing. There was actually critical news, Seahawks news, that came out today about concessions at Lumen Field that I know you've all been like dying to hear about. They're unveiling all these Amazon take it checkout stands where you can just take the food and walk away. I'm really kind of curious what that's going to do. My buddy that I've shared season tickets with for a long time, he will go to get water and I'm like, I'll see you in a quarter. Like,
yeah.
He's just like, he's gone. Like, I would never do that. I would never miss that much of the game. He's like, yeah, I want to go get something. So
I actually have a take forever. On that. I have a take on that because they do that at the Suns games, where every other concession stand is like, nobody's working there. I don't know how they're checking IDs because people are picking up alcohol and leaving. IDs, like, I don't remember my ID getting checked. I don't know if that was just like a one-off situation or something like that, but it's total chaos It's a complete shit show. You have like four rotating screens and you have like 72 like drunk fans trying to desperately get back to the game, like constantly skirting around each other in the different little lines. It's a nightmare.
It would not surprise me if Arizona did not have people checking IDs. I mean,
it's very possible. It's very possible. Very possible. They just said, fuck it.
That would be very on brand. But look, I did the post game show for Tampa, the Tampa game on my own. And I don't recommend listening to it because I was so pissed off. I haven't been that mad about a game in a while. And I felt like the team really booted that game. And I felt like it was, Tampa played well. And I think Tampa's a defensively is a much better opponent than I think a lot of people would have given them credit for. But I think, yes, I see Camden on chat here. Let's put this, see if this works. Yes. I was unreasonably mad. I've calmed down a little bit. I'm still pretty pissed, but I'm curious, Dana, I haven't heard from you. I'd like to hear from you, G. Like, what was your take about what we saw now 2 weeks ago?
To be honest with you, they looked slow. I just kept feeling like the whole team was like running through concrete for some reason. Like it just didn't feel like there was a spark. They seemed tired. They seemed confused. Brian's just playing with things.
I'm playing around. I want to see if I can make you spotlight. I got new toys.
But what was interesting to me is that they just seemed completely off their own game. Like they couldn't. I don't know. My husband looked at me and said, he goes, do they have stars in their eyes? Cause Brady's across from them. Like, what was the deal? Like, it just seemed confused. And then in the second half, it was like, they got yelled at in the locker room or something happened and they came out and started actually looking like Seahawks football. Had they played that way the whole game, they would have won without question. There were a couple of real questionable calls too. They were Brady calls, and that's to be expected anytime that you play Tom Brady. And I truly believe that is a real thing. I'm not trying to be, ridiculous or anything, but I just felt like, I don't know, they had a really good time in Germany. I think and I'm not saying that they had done anything wrong, but they just looked slow and they looked jet lagged, for lack of a better word, but I know they weren't. They had been there plenty of times. So it just was a weird game. I think I said to you after the game, I said, I expected them to have an off game soon.
Yeah.
We thought it would be against the Cardinals. It just ended up being against Tampa Bay. This was their slog of a game.
Yeah, Nathan, I probably should have found a way to have Jeff on the show because he was pretty much as mad as I was, or in the same vicinity, but I'm okay going solo on that. So I two things that got me really mad about that game. One was that I really felt the coaching staff blew it. And I thought they blew it in the sense that, one, to Dana's point, it didn't seem like the team was ready to play. And that's almost never something you say about a Pete Carroll team. That's one of the things I think he's been unnaturally good at. The other was that they absolutely told the team to basically prepare for a pass-only offense, to the point where they healthy scratched Brian Monet from the active list, didn't even have him as an opportunity to put in the game once they realized that they were dead wrong. And those two things I felt like were enough to make the difference in what that game was. I thought there's some other coaching things that really pissed me off in that game, but those are the two that really stood out. And I'm kind of curious, for you, was it as simple as what Dana said, just a slip up game, or did you see more to it?
Yeah. I mean, I think, they definitely just had, the players weren't out there playing really well and they were just getting out. Completely out coached, right? The players weren't making plays and doing stuff, at least in the first half, right? So it's not just the coaching, but I do agree. I mean, they came out and they seemed determined to run the ball, and that didn't work, but they kept with it for a half. I think they made some poor fourth down calls. They got completely caught off guard by the Bucs run game. Not only that they did run it a bunch, but that they ran differently. So I think my daughter might be dying. I don't know if you can hear that or not.
You need to go.
No, I think it's okay. So I mean, But, you know, credit to them because they did come out in the second half and they looked a lot better. And, like, as the kind of stubborn as they seemed about running in the first half, they came out and they were just like, fuck it, we're going empty, like, every play. And so they adapted and, you know, they made a game of it. It just, it, I don't know. I think the thing that I will think about the most with that game, and it's what Pete talked about in the post game, like, it just sucked that they couldn't get the ball back, that they let him run out like 4 minutes at the end of the game. Like, that was just painful.
That was salt in the wound. I agree about the fourth down stuff. We've all gone back and forth on that at times, but I thought there was an absolute crucial moment in that game. It was 0-0, fourth and six. Gino had just made a pass for like 12 yards to get to like a makeable fourth down, and he was ready to go, and it looked like Pete was going to let him go, and then he pulled him off the field so that he could have the team take a delay of game penalty to move the team far enough back so that a punt was even possible. If you do that, you shouldn't be punting, period. And that was a moment where he could have believed in the offense and leaned in. And I actually think that would have been a difference if they had made that choice. If nothing else, I think that was the better choice to make, and they didn't do it. So, Evan, were you awake? Did you watch that game? I'm curious.
Oh, my God. You know me so well. I knew you were going to ask me. I thought you were going to ask me some in-depth question about the game. And I was just going to have to be like, yeah, so I woke up initially. I'm gonna be honest with you guys. I woke up. I think we were an hour ahead, so it may have been 7:30 for me, frankly. So less of an excuse here. I started watching the first quarter. I watched the first quarter, and I was like, "Fuck this! Fuck this! This is too early to be awake to be watching this right now. If they could come out hot, you know, scoring, playing well, like different story. I probably would have stayed awake." But I 100% went back to bed, and I woke up at the end of the third quarter and then watched the fourth quarter. So it sounds like, based off the reports I'm hearing, I missed a lot of badness.
Yeah, the first half.
Only in the first half. The second half was a lot better.
What pick, or when was the Tariq pick?
Second half?
Yeah, definitely the second half, right? And... I think that the reason this game matters is that if you believe this team has a shot at winning the division, mm-hmm. which they were in first place by a chunk. It wasn't like they were just in first place by a game. They were in first place by a little bit of a spread. I think that's a game that was very winnable and that they are going to look back and really regret not getting. So they've already blown games, you know, that hopefully they could have won against New Orleans and against the Falcons and stuff like that. This game, after they'd figured out their defensive philosophy, after they'd figured out, you know, who they have and who they were going to be, after Ken Walker has joined the attack on offense, like, this was a game that they should have taken.
Who was the most disappointing part on Sunday for you, Brian?
Well, Pete. I mean, like, as a from an overall perspective, but as a player, I don't know. As a, you know, the most disappointing aspect was watching them get run on, for sure. I don't know if I could pin that on one player, though.
The lack of Monet's presence.
Yeah, I don't know that would have been the difference, but it certainly was pretty indefensible to have a guy in there in Miles Adams that was there for interior pass rush and to have the guy on that is known to help with run defense sitting there inactive. I don't know. Did you guys have somebody else that stood out to you or some other thing that stood out? Yeah.
No, it's the run defense. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So one of the questions is, like, how much do you take from that game? You know, the Seahawks had really started to be on a roll. They had literally for 4 or 5 weeks, like, the best defense in the NFL, not just good, but the best by DVOA standards, by like EPA standards, by almost any standard. And then they looked pretty crap against what has been a really struggling offense. We've been going back and forth on this whole time. I've been having trouble believing in the front seven. This gave me a little bit more ammunition of, like, I don't know if I should believe in this front seven. Do you expect them to rebound and be the team that they were before this game, that this was really an aberration, Dana? Or do you think that this was maybe a more of a reality check of what this team's capable of?
I think it's fair to say probably a little bit of both, but to be honest with you, with their next upcoming opponents, no, they're going to bounce back just fine. I don't have a lot of worry. I think against this Raiders team coming up, it's, I think that we're going to score 30 points on that team. I mean, it's just a little crazy, but the defensive wise, I think that they'll be able to bounce back. It's pretty obvious what they did wrong, right? Like, it's not like, we don't understand. Why was it so bad? No, they signed up for the wrong, you know, type of plays is what they did. The coaching was wrong. They completely changed it in the second half and came right back to it. So that's why that second half, if they had continued to be completely dominated, I think I would be a little more concerned. But because of that second half change, I think that that just proves to you that they have a system and it works. They just didn't implement it in the first half of that game. So no, I'm not overly worried. Do I think they're a fantastic defense? No, but I don't think that they're as bad as we saw at the beginning of the season.
So Josh Jacobs is, I believe, number third in the NFL in rushing yards. Yeah. He's like, I think he might be three or four, something in that ballpark. So their rushing offense has been pretty good this year. Yeah, the Raiders are not a good football team. I think they're slightly better, honestly, than their record indicates. I think they're 3-7. I think they're probably realistically like a 5-5 team from a quality of talent perspective. And their rushing offense is on, you know, the stronger side of their offense and on the stronger side of the team. So I think this upcoming week is a good litmus test to see if Seattle's run defense can resume, you know, the performance of the past several weeks.
Yeah. Evan, do you, right now, you had to predict, are the Seahawks making the playoffs?
Oh yeah. Without question.
Without question. Anybody have doubts about the Seahawks making the playoffs?
Not if everyone's healthy. Can I list out?
Well, hold on. Before you list out.
Okay.
How many of you think they're going to win the division?
Mm-mm.
No,
I think it'll come down to the last week, but I don't think so.
I think they do.
Francisco looks good, you guys.
So you think they do?
I think they do.
You think they do? Nathan, where are you on this?
Probably not.
So two, probably. Dana's a no. Nathan's a probably not. Evan's a yes. So the key thing here, and I want to hear your reasons on this, but if they don't win the division, then they've got to have, obviously they got to have a better record than some of the other competition. Like the Commanders are coming on. The whole NFC East has got pretty decent records. You've got the other division winners. You've got some losses against folks like Tampa Bay. If Tampa Bay happens to fall out, I think if you don't win the division, the playoffs become more complicated for the Seahawks.
Okay. Sure. So I'm going to put an asterisk attached to my answer because I just looked up the 49ers remaining schedule and that is bullshit.
Yeah.
That is bullshit.
Yeah.
They're playing high school football teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's unfair, man.
And everyone's finally getting healthy. They were not healthy and now they are. It's yucky.
Yeah, we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about them because there's too many nice things to say about them, and I refuse to allow that on this on this broadcast. But I think the Seahawks were the favorites to win the division if they had won that game against Tampa Bay, even with the things going on with the 49ers. I think without that win, without the 7-3 record, without any buffer between them, they're now in second place, you know, technically. I think it's going to be unlikely that the Seahawks end up winning the division, and I think that's going to make the playoffs tougher. So I'm curious how it plays out. We're going to talk more about this game in this week, but part of the reason I wanted to ask that question, sorry, Nathan, were you going to say something?
Well, I'm not quite sure. I mean, Seattle has two games the rest of the year that they won't be favored in, probably. Mm-hmm. The Niners and the Chiefs. They get the Raiders, the Rams twice, the Panthers and the Jets. That is not a murderer's row of opponents.
You're not a big fan of
Zach Wilson?
No, I don't know that he scares me a whole lot right now.
I am not sold they're beating the Rams in both games.
Of course you're
not. You may not even have Stafford.
I have PTSD.
And they don't have Cooper. No, they absolutely should beat the Rams. Yes.
They should, yes. Will they? is a different question.
I don't know, but they could jump up and beat the Niners or the Chiefs too. Like, that's not like guaranteed
they could.
Losses either. So
they could.
So yeah, I don't know that they're going to win the division. I mean, it's hard to predict that they will after what they looked like against the Niners the first time around. But I mean, I don't know. They still have a half game up on the Commanders, and they have to. I mean, the Commanders could lose a few more games here too. They don't have the easiest schedule. So
Not sold that they need to win the division. Like, if this team gets in the playoffs,
that's true.
They just could do some stupid, crazy, good stuff. Like, this is an unpredictable team, and if they catch like the positive side of the variance, both defensively, and they continue, you know, to be mostly a powerhouse from an offensive perspective, all you need is a 3-4 game stretch. I'm just not convinced that this team on this season. Would need a home field advantage to go far.
I think I agree with that. I'm like, my eyes are on making the playoffs, and I think the odds are that they do, but I don't think the odds are that they're going to win the division at this point. And I think that makes things a lot more unpredictable overall. And so I'd be curious. This is a game like we'll talk about this week with the Raiders. You can't lose these games. You're done with these types of games where you blow something, like, you can't. And so it's a little bit different when you're hunted and not the hunter. And I think that that's going to be a little bit something that they're going to have to deal with down the stretch. But with that in mind, now that we've got our updated points of view on the record books, I did want to take a second. This is on advice from our very own Josh Cashman. To revisit our preseason predictions for this team. We're not going to go through all of them because it takes hours, but I do want to call out a few things. So first of all, just as a refresher, the range of predictions for this season were at this point, where I'm going to basically pretend that, well, yeah, I'm not going to do the math to do this. Basically, Evan was the lowest at predicting the Seahawks to finish 2-15. He had them going 1-11 through the first 12 games. Trey, our Wunderkind's production support, was the most optimistic. He's the only person that predicted the Seahawks to have a winning record, 9-8 for the year, and 6-6 at this point in the season. Even he had them losing in the wild card. So the most optimistic was a one game over 500 season. Dana, you had them at 6-11. Nathan, you had them at 7-10. You were trying to talk yourself into Trey's playoff view. So you had, like, I have to give you credit of, like, you were like, if things fall the right way, maybe playoffs could happen. I had them as 8-9. I originally had them at 7-10, but then I changed my prediction about the Broncos game right before that game. So I ended up at 8-9. Evan, how do you feel about, like, this has got to have been the most shocking to you, given what you predicted.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about this the other day, and I think it's pretty synonymous with, I think, the way many Seahawks fans feel. But the last 5 or 6 years have been really frustrating for me personally as a Seahawks fan in terms of the expectations I had for the team and where they were falling. And this is a season that has made me fall in love with football again, just to be honest with you. It's going in with no expectations, and, you know, the priority is just, you know, have fun, develop some players and see where the chips fall. And, you know, being surprised with a positive outcome, an extraordinarily positive outcome, by the way, is just, it's the peak in the height of potential fulfillment, you know, I think I could have in this season. So I'm just kicking back, and I'm just enjoying this ride, frankly.
Nathan, what do you feel like you were most right about in like trying to talk yourself into this team being a playoff potential contender? And what do you feel like you got the most wrong about the team preseason?
I said all along that, like, this is not going to be an awful, terrible team, which is what a lot of people were saying. Like, a lot of people thought, you know, oh, they'd be lucky to win five games. They're going to absolutely be in the top three for a draft pick and stuff like that. And I never believed that. So I definitely was right, most right about that. I guess the thing I got the most wrong was just, I guess I just didn't see the upside totally. I mean, I did come around and start to think that they'd make the playoffs, but I mean, I definitely didn't see us thinking about Geno like this and that, you know, just how good they could really be. So I guess that's really where I missed. I don't know. I don't think I had any really bad misses though.
Yeah. We'll find out when we go to the other part of the predictions.
Well, so in the predictions, when we did the predictions, I had them 7-10 or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
But then it was after that that I bought in on the playoffs idea. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah, they're way better than I expected for sure.
Yeah. Dana, anything that stands out for you about your perspective preseason and what's changed? Like what was like the thing that you felt like you just really completely didn't expect and maybe were wrong about?
It's their win total. I had to talk myself into six wins. Like I was further down there with Evan. I think the first time I went through that, I literally had them winning four games. I'm like, all right, well, maybe. Because I remember very specifically, I was saying it's going to be tight games and it's going to be just a tip one way or the other. And at the beginning, it was kind of like that. But I was just like trying to bring out some positivity about these wins. Because let's be honest, none of us had any idea that this is who Geno was going to be. We thought the defense was going to be good to bring Geno along. We had it so backwards. But the fact that they've already hit these six wins, I'm just like, what? Like, it's just baffling to me that I had to talk myself into it. And honestly, after the first couple games, I thought I was still right. Really was like, oh,
it looked like it was going to form. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And then it just picked up from there. And it's been so fun. So I know we're talking about playoffs and I don't think they'll win the division. Do I think they'll make the playoffs? I think the NFC is bad enough that they actually might be able to get into the playoffs. But that's not a knock on the team that I don't think these things about them because I'm still so freaking thrilled that they've actually played as well as they have. So.
Yeah. It, in some ways I'm disappointed that I have expectations now. It was really fun to tune in to Seahawks games and be like, whatever, like get up and go to the bathroom, go to the, you know, the kitchen. Didn't really care if I missed a couple plays. That was never me for 30, 40 years. Right. And like, this season doesn't really matter that much. We'll just see what happens. And then after they beat the Cardinals, I had expectations. I'm like, this team should go 7-3. They should get into the bye week 7-3. And then they should be able to win a bunch of games all the way up. They could have been 10-3 heading into the 49ers game. Like, so now I do have expectations and I hope they continue to play better than we expected and don't crash back down. So a couple other predictions that I will bring up. We won't go through them all, as I said. So Trey, as much as he gets credit for being the most bullish on the Seahawks, his prediction for Geno Smith starts in the season was 9. So Trey was imagining Drew Locke essentially riding into the rescue for this team. And I think, Dana, you were the next lowest with 12, but like everybody else was pretty much expecting Geno to start most of the season. So that's been a little different. Jeff was the closest on Geno's passing TDs. He predicted 20. You know, Evan, you had him for 12. So that was the spread there.
Turns out that's Russell Wilson's passing touchdown number for the year.
Isn't he supposed to have less passing touchdowns than rooms in his bathrooms in his house? Is that
see that dumb statistic? That he has more bathrooms in his house than he does passing touchdowns right now. I think it's 12 bathrooms to 7 passing touchdowns.
Yeah, he's going to be lucky to get to 12 at this point.
It's looking rough. It's looking rough in Denver. I was way off on Rashad Penny rushing yards because of injury. I think I was on track if he had stayed healthy. I had him for 1,100. Evan was most bearish at 400. And then I was most wrong as well about Kenneth Walker. I had him for 210 yards. He practically has that every game. Evan had him for 1,200 yards.
And what's he at right now?
Nowhere close, dude.
580. It's going to be tough after that Tampa game. He basically punted that game. So
yeah. How many games are left? Is it six?
Yeah.
So he has to have 100 yards.
No, seven.
Seven yards. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's pretty unlikely.
I'm not giving up hope.
I was wrong there. One that I thought was kind of interesting, predicting who is going to have the third most receptions on this team. I thought that was a little bit tough this year. Jeff and I got it right so far. Do you guys know who it is before I tell you?
Will.
You get Disley.
Disley?
What do you guess, Dana? Oh, Nathan, stop shaking your head. You're giving it away. She was going to say Will Disley.
No, I wasn't. No, I was thinking I was going to be Kenneth Walker, but no.
That's a good guess too.
Yeah, I can't. I don't know.
And by the way, that was your preseason guess.
I love that you're memory holing the starting tight end for this football team.
Oh my God. It's Noah Fant?
It's Noah Fant.
Is it really?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I think most people would get that wrong. Like,
yeah.
Well, we did give him a big 4-year, $32 million deal in the offseason. So,
did we really?
No, that was Disley.
I'm being a dickhead because Disley has actually been good this year. So,
I was like, what is he talking about?
Well, one more thing on Geno. Where is it? We had an over under on passer rating. Oh, there it is. Passer rating of 92.5. Evan and Derek and Josh were under. So it's like very disapproving. Everybody else was over. Daryl Taylor having 10 plus sacks. Evan and Dana were over. So they were true. Everyone else was false.
There's a question on here, more sacks, Jamal Adams or Cody Barton? And the more interesting one right now is more sacks, Cody Barton or Daryl Taylor?
Cody Barton.
Taylor has 3 and Barton has 2. So Barton can pull that off.
I am hoping against hope. It is super unrealistic. John Rattigan coming off the injured reserve, back to practice, special teams ace and better linebacker than Cody Barton. If somehow, some way he can start rotating in there, I think Rattigan will take those snaps away from Barton and we'll be saved.
Barton tried to win that game for Seattle last.
He did. He made the catch that Jordan Brooks could not. Mm-hmm. So good on him. First interception of Tom Brady in like 50 years. It was like 400 attempts or something. It was crazy. Anything else here that's of interest? Who has more interceptions, Tariq Woolen or Kobe Bryant? Both Nathan and I and Josh had Kobe Bryant, so that's going to have to take a big swing. Everyone else had Woolen. I think one of the things that's most interesting is predicting points per game scored and allowed. And the Seahawks right now are scoring 25.7 points a game, up from 23 last year. The highest prediction of any of us was 21.7 for Trey. Every one of us had them scoring at least a couple points less per game than they did last season. Defensively, they allowed 21.5 last year. This year, they are allowing 24.1. And we actually were pretty close on that. The worst was Evan predicting 28.5, which is very, very bearish. The most optimistic was actually Nathan at 21.9. So that is kind of a quick walk through some of the predictions. We'll obviously revisit all this at the end of the year, but team's different. Team's definitely different than it was when we started. So you guys brought up the Denver stuff, and we're not going to go super deep. We've talked about the Broncos struggling. It was amazing and awesome that they lost that game. The Seahawks now have the 5th pick as of right now in this draft next year. Nathan, I'm curious for you. What do you want the Seahawks to do if they end up with a fifth pick overall? Like, what's the move that is would most benefit the Seahawks realistically, knowing who might be available?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of good options for them. I'm still of the opinion that they should try to keep Geno and keep him around for 3, 4, or 5 years or whatever. So quarterback isn't the top of my list, but I'm not going to cry if they walk away with like Bryce Young or something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that the case for all of you? If the Seahawks end up drafting Bryce Young or Stroud or something like that, how will you feel? Evan, you're like all in. Dana, you're not. Tell me why. Dana.
Because I don't like quarterbacks. I think they're overrated. I think that you know this about me, you guys. Come on. But here's the thing. Yes, those two quarterbacks are fantastic. I don't think you have nearly they're not going to come in and do what Geno has done this year. I just don't see that in the first year of a quarterback. That's me. I don't want to hear about it on Twitter. Just let it go, people. But here's the thing. I think that they are going to get eaten up so fast, or people are going to be moving up to get those. I mean, we have to think of teams who are really, truly quarterback hungry, right? We have to look at the Texans. We have to look at the Colts. We have to look at really even the Lions at some point. But so no, I would prefer they went with some of those better defensive players and just roll with Geno for another year. And I know my tune has changed. I know that's not what I said at the beginning of the year, but we've seen a completely different world now at this point. So I have switched, because I think it was, Brian, I think it was you that I was arguing with about this. I'm like, you can't pass up a quarterback that high. Now I'm thinking you can pass up a quarterback that high.
Evan.
So this is what I want to jump in with. They apply the transition tag to Geno Smith, which is like, I think, estimated to be $33 million on a 1-year deal. The way the transition tag just works, just so the audience is aware, he can negotiate with other teams. And if the Seahawks don't, match the contract, then Geno Smith would take that contract, that proposed contract, with another team. And that team would be forced to give the Seahawks 2 first-round picks. Okay. So there's the transition franchise tag, and then there's the exclusive franchise tag. The transition tag is a lot cheaper. I think the actual exclusive franchise tag is like $15 million more expensive. So would you guys be upset if Seattle didn't, you know, go higher than that $33 million mark and walked away with 2 first-round picks? Like, Brian, would you be okay with that?
This is the non-exclusive franchise tag.
Correct. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah, because you said transition. So I think that that's probably the right move. You know, so it's hard to, like, right now, if that's what they did, I think that would be defensible and I would be okay with it, given where the Seahawks are and where they are roster wise. If Geno plays, if he at least sustains this level and even improves on it, then I think it starts to be a much more questionable decision. And so, yeah, I'll say my answer could change, but right now that seems like very much the right approach. And it would be hard to imagine that anyone's going to give up 2 first-round picks in any situation for Geno Smith, even if he plays really well the rest of the year.
You really couldn't see some really dumb, stupid team doing it. They're going to have a top pick.
I mean, the Broncos just did it. Didn't work out so well.
Colts could do it. Washington could do it. There are teams out there that could do something dumb. But I mean, my original point was, I'm not going to hate it if they draft a quarterback, right? If they do something like that with Geno and he walks and they manage to fall into a windfall of picks or whatever, and they go with the quarterback, I'm not going to be sad about that. But I do agree that, you know, right now, I think the dream would be getting Will Anderson or Jalen Carter. Like, those two are, you know, special defensive players, the two best defensive players probably in the draft. I don't know a ton about this draft class. Derek was talking about the Tariq Woolen clone at cornerback, or the guy who like measures out similar to Tariq Woolen. That would be pretty shocking because they've Shaquille Griffin's the highest cornerback they've ever taken. But if they want to grab a Tariq Woolen clone, I will be pretty excited about that too. So they're going to have options there. I think it's going to be pretty exciting no matter, you know, it's going to be hard for them to mess it up. I mean, Bijan Robinson.
Well, here's the real question I want to know from each of you. So Evan, you should be listening too, because I know you're texting one of your side pieces, but if the Seahawks, like, there's a potential that the ESPN, their projection right now is that the Seahawks actually end up with the third overall pick. And I think it's realistic that the Seahawks could end up there. And in that case, there is going to be both Will Anderson and Jalen Carter available, most likely, almost like 99% likely. The two quarterbacks will go 1 and 2. There will also be some quarterbacks that are high, like some people feel differently about, you know, the kid from Kentucky and whatever. So here's the question, though. Let's say they have the number 3 overall pick and they trade back. They trade back to, like, say, the 10th pick, and they get another first for next year. They get the 10th pick this year, and maybe they pick up a third or whatever. But basically, you are giving up the chance to take Will Anderson, Jalen Carter, or one of those quarterbacks in order to get more picks. How do you feel about that, Evan?
I'm comfortable with it. If they only slide back 5 or 6 spots, especially if Geno's still in the fold, I think that's the right move. Those top 5 picks are so flipping valuable, and especially if you get a quarterback needy team, you know, at 8 or 9, 10 that wants to move up, you could see them really leverage the future in like a Trey Lance type of situation if they're really obsessed with the player. So I think the potential value is there. It comes down to what the offer is, but will I be upset about it? Probably not.
Dana?
I'd be pissed as hell. I'm so tired of, I agree with everyone in chat. No, I just, here's the deal. If you want to play with one of your picks, play with the one that's ours. Keep this one from Denver. And honest to God, you know that it would just be poetic justice if they got the 3rd pick and could actually land one of those 2 quarterbacks. So your pick from Denver is to get one of the best quarterbacks in the draft. That'd be hilarious. I mean, there would be some very nice little karma, you know, moment there. But no, I don't want him to trade back. I want him to use it. I want that top level trade. I mean, when was the last time Seattle's had that high of a pick? They have to use it. They have to use it. If you want to mess around with the lower level pick so you can get more in your 4th, 5th round, whatever, go ahead and do it. But this one, you need that moment. You need 2 first round picks, and the higher the better.
Nathan, I think I assume with you, you are always down for trading to get more picks. That's been your MO. How would you feel in this case?
Yeah, this is, I mean, if you have the number 3 pick, it's a little different, right? Because you really do have, you know, your pick of Will Anderson or Jalen Carter probably at that point. And that's, that to me, like, those two guys are worth staying, right? The other thing is,
I love that.
Those two are like, I mean, I would, again, there are so many different things that they could do that I'm not going to be mad about. And if they trade down with Anderson and Carter on the board, I'm not going to freak out. I mean, I'm probably not going to love it, but you know, they will almost certainly get a massive haul for that. So I would definitely understand it. Here's, you know, you're talking about trading down to like 10 though. So I'm looking at the CBS Sports draft rankings, and this is going to change so much by the time the draft actually happens. But you know, Will Anderson is 1, Young, Stroud, Jalen Carter is 4. If you're trading down to 10, some of the other players in this area, you have Peter Skoronski is an offensive tackle from Northwestern, another offensive tackle from Penn State, a tight end from Notre Dame, 2 cornerbacks, another offensive lineman, a running back. Now, I don't know anything about Jared Verse. They have him the 9th ranked prospect. He's an edge. He's a sophomore too, so he might even come out. But my point here is, if you trade down into a sea of offensive tackles and cornerbacks, feels a little awkward for what they probably want.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want to trade from 3 to 5, that to me would be really, really interesting, even though you're risking potentially losing out on both Anderson and Carter. But trading down into 10 or a little lower, I don't know if that makes a ton of sense. And I say that without knowing much about any of the prospects beyond Anderson, Young, and Carter.
Yeah, this is all just fun speculation at this point. Who knows where this pick will be? Who knows what players will be there? Who knows how they'll all perform in combines and future, speculation or evaluations. What I will say is, if there's evidence that Jalen Carter and Will Anderson are generational talents, they're blue chip, like elite Khalil Mack, game wreckers. I'm not going to say Aaron Donald, because Aaron Donald's if not the best defensive player that ever played the game, he's one of the top. I'm not saying that, but if you're an all pro level defensive tackle or defensive end and you trade back and you get some red chip guys that are potentially like pro bowlers, but not all pros, that will be a catastrophic mistake. And so I'm not at the point where I can say for sure what the drop off is between those two guys and the others, but everything I've read and heard is that there's a pretty significant drop off. So let's hope we have this debate that we get to have, like if the Seahawks have the third overall pick and they're in the playoffs. Holy shit. Cause it won't just be the third overall pick in the first round. It'll be the third overall pick in the second round.
Thank you. People keep forgetting that's like if the Broncos suck that hard the rest of the year, that might as well be another late first round pick.
Exactly. We basically got our third first round pick that we said we wanted.
What is that? Three picks in the top 35.
35. No? Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be
hot
fun.
And heavy in here right now. When I hear that, oh,
it's so
Lord.
True.
It'll
it's
be a
true.
Draft to be in Kansas City. I'm going to sit right there. I can't wait to be right there.
All right. Do you guys have enough time for us to take some Patreon questions and then talk Raiders? We'll probably go a little bit late. Nathan, would you mind starting to find the Patreon questions? And while you're doing that, I will remind folks, if you haven't already, give the show a like. We would appreciate it. Quick thumbs up and click subscribe to get access to the YouTube channel right away. And any other click the bell to get notified when we go live. Also, go over to patreon.com/hawkblogger. That is how you get instant access to the Slack channel. And folks, nobody knows what the heck is going on with Twitter. So if you want a reliable place to have solid Seahawks conversation with sane people doing sane things, the Real Hawk Talk Slack channel is the place to be. So patreon.com/hawkblogger. This is a great time to sign up. Plenty to discuss. Really good people. Hundreds of other Seahawks fans in there. And no matter what happens with Twitter, that'll be a place, a safe home to talk Seahawks. All right, Nathan, what do we got?
All right, Dana, I got one from you from Jonathan Lulay. Okay. Why is there no talk about Quandre Diggs' poor season? He's had 5 picks each the past 2 seasons and has 0 so far this year with low PFF grades. Mm-hmm. Just can't get that video of Jordan Brooks and him getting into it on the sidelines earlier this season. Do you think he's having a poor season?
I do. I think he's having, I don't know if it's a poor season, it's a down season. And oh God, more than anything, I wanted him to get a pick 6 in Germany so bad. But I do think that there's, I don't know if he is frustrated with the way he's being used. I don't know if they just have so much other talent around where just he's not getting the opportunity. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a contract thing. I mean, that's what everyone keeps talking about. It's like, oh, he got paid, so now he's just sitting on his tush. I don't buy that, but that's what people say. But here's the thing. I think that we have mentioned it. We've talked about Quandre not playing super well on this show, but I do think I'm going to state it again. This defense was originally slated to be around Jamal Adams, and so the two of them together working tandemly. So I think that hopefully we'll see an uptick. I think he's played better. I think along with the whole defense, he's played better the last few games, but there just seems to be a spark missing from that. I don't know. I don't know if it's mental. I don't know if it's injury. I don't know what it is, but there just seems to be something missing from his game this year for sure.
Brian, Jen Mozzarella wants to know, is Trey Brown better than Mike Jackson?
That's an awesome question. And for folks that don't know, Trey Brown had a press conference today. He is officially back on the, on the active roster, and word is that he is going to be in competition with Michael Jackson for that starting cornerback spot, which is awesome. So I do believe Trey Brown is a better cornerback than Michael Jackson. I think Jackson has certainly been a more than competent starting corner and has been fine to play. I think he's shown some physical nature that not all cornerbacks do, and it's been great to see him show up and like lay some hits. But I think Trey Brown might be really good. Like, he might be really good. And the challenge this year is he's coming off a pretty big injury. So I don't know, similar to Quandre and some of the other guys, if often it's the year after they've done rehab that they come back and are kind of their normal selves. So I don't know if we're going to see that version of Trey Brown this year, but it would be awesome to get him in there. I really hope they do rotate him and we get to see some snaps from him.
Dana, Jen also wants to know, should we grab a running back off waivers? Daryl Henderson and Melvin Gordon are two notable running back cuts this week. Are you interested in either of them?
I did put on Twitter, I thought it would be hilarious if they picked up Melvin Gordon. I thought that would be very funny. I don't know. But no, I don't think so. I mean, I know that they were interested in picking up another running back. I know that they were looking into that. And I guess for injury insurance, that might be a good idea. But I don't really have any interest in either one of those two players. Am I crazy for that? I don't see any upside to them.
No, I mean, I think Homer and Dallas are fine as backups. So, Evan, Rob Kinnear wants to know, who are some players you'd like to see get more or fewer snaps the rest of the season? Do you have a Marquise Blair that you're jonesing to see on the field that you think the coaches are making a mistake by not playing more?
More or less snaps from anybody?
Jason Myers?
More or less, though.
Which one? Less.
I want more kicks from Jason Myers. We got to pump up that contract value. I don't know. Can I flip this one back to you guys? Is there a player that jumps out for any of you on either side of the ball?
Brian is dying to get Cody Barton fewer snaps, obviously.
I mean,
I don't have someone to put in his place, though, because the way the roster is constructed.
Like,
are you
wanting Josh Jones on the field more often and like more nickel? Like, that's what it would mean right now.
Yeah, there's nobody that I look at.
Ah, that's actually a good one. Derek Young. I would like to see more Derek Young and less D'Eskridge. Not because I think Derek Young is the next great thing, but I don't know. And I think we've got a lot of evidence that D'Eskridge is not. So I'm ready to see somebody else. Ah, good one in chat here. I'll throw up there.
It's an interesting one.
Phil, yeah, Rob laid that one up for you
outplayed. Too. He has completely outplayed Gabe Jackson. It's not close.
Right.
Gabe Jackson's got that big contract too, and he's entering the final year of his deal next year. So
yeah. Yeah. I'll throw another one on there from chat. Good old Camden with
fewer LJ Collier snaps, please.
I think knowing Camden wants more LJ. He just wants LJ starting, maybe. I'm sure Camden's going to appreciate that comment. Those are some good ones. Those are some good ones.
No.
Yeah, we needed help from the chat there, because it's been pretty easy to have that conversation in past years because there's been such obvious why isn't this person playing conversations. Not as much this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was interesting because nothing really jumped out to me either. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do we need to see a little bit less of Daryl Taylor?
For who?
Right. Well, and I think that's the problem, though. Right? Yeah.
I mean, we already are. Like, Bruce Irvin has taken over that spot, and it's Bruce Irvin and Uchenna Nwosu. And then even after that, I think we've seen Boye Mafe take snaps. So Taylor is really just a rotational pass rusher right now, which I'm okay with.
Okay, that's it. There were questions about whether the Seahawks can beat the 49ers to win the West and whether the we'd be okay with trading down, but I think we've hit all those already. So
cool. Well, again, patreon.com/hawkblogger. That is how you get instant access to that Slack channel, and you can ask us questions every week. So appreciate that. All right, let's talk about this Raiders game. This is a, like, I usually write my tale of the tape Wednesday morning, so I did a little bit of pre-research, but have not finished all of it. When I was looking at this Raiders team, in some ways, like, they should be better than their record, and in other ways, they should be what their record is. Like, there's been some weird games for them. They don't have a particularly, like, big injury issue where there's been something that's really changed there. They've been pretty stable in general. But, I mean, this is 32nd in the league defense against quarterbacks. Their passer rating against is dead last in the NFL. Yards per attempt, 27th. Completion percentage, 32nd in the NFL. Against what is the number one completion percentage quarterback in the NFL this week? They are dead last in the NFL in taking the ball away from opponents. 32nd. That's been a big part of what they've been. And then offensively, they're kind of okay. They're not great. They're like a middling offense that's like 16th in points per game, 16th in yards per game, 12th in yards per play, which I think is generally a decent evaluation. They're first in the league in terms of giveaways. They do not give the ball away. So they're this weird team that is first in the NFL in terms of protecting the ball. They are dead last in the NFL and taking it away. So Raiders games don't generally have a lot of turnovers one way or the other. But essentially, they have advantages over the Seahawks in pretty much every category on offense. And the Seahawks have advantages over them, more advantages over them in every category when they're on offense. So I'm curious, like, Dana, you cover a bunch of different teams.
Yep.
What do you make of this Raiders team? From a DVOA perspective, they just had their best game of the season in terms of beating the Broncos. Plus 44% DVOA, their best game. What do you think about this Raiders team?
Well, I pay a lot of attention to this division, obviously, since I cover it. But here's the interesting thing. At the beginning of the season, I really expected the AFC West to be the new NFC West. They were going to be hyper competitive. Everyone is going to be really good. It was going to come down to the wire to see who won this division. Obviously, the complete opposite has happened. The Chiefs already have it completely locked up. And no one else is even close, right? The interesting thing about this is the Raiders are the one I thought might give them the most trouble. Although I love Herbert and I love the way the Chargers are put together. Their injuries have just destroyed that team, and we know that. But the Raiders are interesting because they brought in Josh McDaniels, which is a completely different style of coaching than what this team was built for. And I think that that's where we're starting to see some real issues with this team. I think that he came in, and while he's not Bill Belichick, he has some Bill Belichick tendencies. This team was built by very different coaches over the last few years. I was kind of surprised he kept Derek Carr, to be honest with you, when they were kind of doing everything. So I think that you have a little bit of coaching philosophies not really fitting their talent level not really being used properly or injured. I think they really thought that they would have like this great, you know, punch between Renfro and Devontae Adams, and it just hasn't showed up. But it's their defense. Their defense is a disaster. They have, I think it was one game they were up by 17 points and they still managed to lose this game.
The Jaguars game.
Yeah, it was a disaster.
Yeah. Yeah, they were
and
up.
So it's
20-7 and lost 27-20, like gave up 20 yeah. straight points.
The second half of games are disastrous for the Raiders. And so what I think is that I know I've read and I've talked to a couple of reporters, Josh McDaniel, or he's not going anywhere. They're going to keep him for another year. It's not like they're going to fire him, even though the fans really want them to. He really seems to have Mark Davis's ear that he's going to be around for a while. I think they're just going to do some massive shifting for this team to come together, and it will not be this year. This year it's kind of a lost season for them, in my opinion. So if Seattle's offense can, I think DK is going to end up having a day. Like, I just think, I have a feeling that they're just going to run all over this defense. So I think the Seahawks defense just has to figure out a way just to slow down the few weapons that they have.
Yeah, Nathan, one of the things I looked up on this Raiders defense. So according to PFF, 10 of the Raiders. So this is the worst tackling team defense in the NFL. 10 of the top 11 players on the defense in terms of snaps, so the players that play the most often, 10 of the top 11 have missed at least 10% of their tackles, double digit percentages. In fact, the only person that hasn't has missed 9% of their tackles. And the one who's worst is their slot corner, Amik Robertson, who has a Justin Coleman-esque 30%. He misses 3 out of every 10 attempts to tackle somebody. So, you know, and just as by comparison, because the Seahawks have not been a great tackling team either, you know, they're like 7 out of 10 are double digits. And if you go over 15%, it's like 6 out of 10 for the Raiders and only like 2 out of 10 for the Seahawks. So like they're really, really bad at tackling. Who do you think gets helped by the most by that on the Seahawks team?
I mean, DK could have himself a day. If you can't, he's already a problem enough. If you can't get him down, it's going to be a nightmare. I mean, I don't know. Not being able to tackle benefits everyone. I mean, it's going to benefit Kenneth Walker. It won't benefit Tyler Lockett because he'll just fall down anyway. But literally every single
other player. Tyler gets hurt because he feels like he's now got to like get yak, I'm going to be so pissed.
He doesn't. Yeah, it's fine. He can fall down. He's good enough that he can just fall down all the time.
Yes, he is.
Probably should have a little bit better idea where the first down marker is, but yeah, other than that, it's fine. Yeah, I mean, if you can't tackle, I mean, we saw that at the start of the year. If you can't tackle on defense, it's just a nightmare.
Evan, have you watched any Raiders games this year? Do you have a feel at all for this team?
I actually have watched a couple of their games. Do you know where 2 out of their 3 wins come from?
I do. But tell us.
The Broncos. They've won 1 game this season against a team not named the Broncos. They have won 1 game with a win against a team, against an opponent with a winning record. That was week 5 of the 2022 NFL season. So the Raiders, I think, from their, how do I phrase this? As an outside viewer, their biggest flaw is coaching. Josh McDaniels is totally suspect. That entire fan base doesn't trust him. He's proven he's not capable. I think there's a real coaching mismatch here, frankly, in this game. I think they're underperforming their talent level. I think they actually match up from a Seattle Seahawks perspective. I think we actually match up really well with them. Our offense is obviously one of the top offenses in the NFL. Their defense is bottom 5 in the NFL. If we can lock down Devontae Adams, which I think we can do with our corners and our secondary, I see very little hope for their offense moving the ball in any sort of sustained fashion. So I think from a matchup perspective, I'm pretty optimistic about this. And this maybe goes without saying, but if Seattle was to lose this game, then I start getting really concerned. Like you can excuse off the Bucs game, flying across the pond, whatever, jet lagged, whatever. I don't think you could excuse away a home loss to the Raiders. That would be really bad. Even with a team with zero expectations, like most fans have.
Here's the thing. I want to check this with all of you. Worst case scenario, the Seahawks fall apart the rest of the year and like end up not making the playoffs. I don't think that will mean that the offensive tackles aren't good. I don't think that will mean that Kenneth Walker isn't good. I don't think that will mean that Tariq Woolen or Kobe Bryant aren't good. I think it will mean some of the players we actually already know aren't good or are maybe not good. And it most telling will be Geno. Like, I think the rest of the season has most implications about how much you invest in Geno Smith as your future quarterback. So in that regard, like, not the worst case scenario. I certainly am pretty invested in them making the playoffs, but you're right. Like, if they lose to this team, it would be really, it would be pretty catastrophic for the chances to make the playoffs. I don't know if it would be catastrophic in terms of where they're going overall as a franchise. Like, I think everyone says the house money thing. I don't feel that way, but I do feel like some of the most important things about this season have already been proven, regardless of what happens the rest of the year. You guys agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, it could change, but assuming that, you know, yeah, if they miss the playoffs because Geno turns back into a pumpkin, then you draft a quarterback high and you move on with the plan that everyone thought they were going to have in the first place. So
right. What do you guys think of Derek Carr? Like,
I'm kind of surprised they extended him.
Yeah, me too. I didn't think he'd be there.
Say more. Like, what?
He's just like the pinnacle of mediocrity. like he's not bad, but he's not good, and he's just enough to keep you competitive, but they're not even really competitive this year. I don't know. To me, they should. We talked about this, I think, offline in our group chat. This is a team that, you know, if they wound up with a high pick, then they need to be looking at quarterback. I don't care about that Derek Carr extension. He's not good enough. He doesn't uplift the team like, you know, like Patrick Mahomes does or something like that.
It would be odd. I mean, I hope you're right. It would be if the Raiders right now, for what it's worth, have a higher pick than the Broncos, even though the Raiders have beaten the Broncos twice, just based on how they do tiebreakers for draft picks is wonky. But if the Raiders pick a quarterback, that would be great for the Seahawks. Unless you want the Seahawks to draft a quarterback. But, like, I don't know. I mean, with you, Dana and Evan, I just see him as, like, mediocre, but they've committed to him. And I don't know that I see them signing him to that deal and then also drafting a rookie in the top five.
I think they would have to have a trade partner in mind for him. They would have to be willing to eat part of that contract, have a decent trade partner in order for them to take that risk. Otherwise, it's pretty illogical from a business standpoint. But we have to figure out if McDaniels, if he wants him, if that's going to be his coach. Because honest to God, it really seems like from everything I've read and everything I've heard, the Raiders organization is behind this coach. And so it's just going to be, I don't think it would be logical for them to take one so high unless they had that other situation set up. Otherwise, you have to keep him at least one more year, I think. But yeah, he is so inconsistent, and it's so hard to know what you're going to get out of him. He has brilliant moments. There are times Derek Carr looks like an elite quarterback, but they're so few and far between at this point. And they've gotten the weapons around him and it hasn't changed much. So I think that it would be, he's just not going to be good enough long-term for them, but I think they'll have to keep him at least one more year.
This, I mean, the Raiders are going to be pivotal to the future of the Seahawks more than they ever have been. They've already helped by beating the Broncos twice. Whatever happens in this game is going to influence where the Seahawks pick is. Whatever they do with their pick is going to influence the Seahawks most likely. And yeah, Derek Carr is elite at getting rid of the ball quickly, not getting sacked, and not throwing turnovers. He doesn't throw a ton of picks, but like, there's going to be a lot of quick passes and it'll be interesting. Like, the Seahawks are going to have to tackle well. Devontae Adams has been a handful for Seattle. You know, when he's been in Green Bay, he's a handful this week. We'll see how that goes. This game isn't as this game is not a David versus Goliath from my perspective. I don't think this is as clearly like Seattle should dominate as maybe we would all hope they would, but I am curious. Let's get to predictions. I am going to start with you, Nathan. What is going to be, who's going to win this game, and what is going to be the score?
I'll go 27-19 Seattle.
Okay. Dana.
I think it's going to be more than that. I think it's going to be Seattle's going to win it. It's going to be 30-17.
30-17. Evan.
It is not uncommon for Pete Carroll football teams to struggle after the bye, coming out of a bye. I think they've lost 8 out of 12 coming out of a bye. So I think this game is going to be ugly, and I think the Seahawks are going to scrape by. What was that, Dana?
Like, is it Pete the struggles or Russ? Just kidding. Go ahead. Sorry. Oh, go ahead. Oh. Sorry. Had to throw it out there.
We'll find out with an additional point this year. but I think Seattle wins in a very gross game, 17-14.
Okay. I actually like that. I think that's not a bad pick. I'm looking at the Raiders scores, right? Every game for the Raiders. Only one time this season have they allowed less than 20 points, and it was last week against the Broncos, which I think you just throw out any game against that Broncos offense right now. They've allowed 24 points or more in 7 out of their 10 games. So that plus the tackling issue, I feel like this game, I think everyone's right. This could be a tough game, trap game, frustrating game. I think that's all totally possible. I think the Seahawks end up winning this game 30-14. I think they're going to put up some points against this team. I think they're going to be able to hopefully run the ball. And I think there'll be a couple big plays against them. Hopefully the Seahawks get back on track and move to 7-4. So that is the call. I think each of us have the Seahawks winning. We will see on Sunday how it actually turns out. Thank you to Dana O'Gorman at Dana OG on Twitter, Evan Hill at Evan Hill HB, and Nathan Ernst at Nathan E11. And thanks to all of you for tuning in. If you haven't already, please give the show a like. It takes 2 seconds. Click subscribe for the channel on YouTube. Click the bell to get notified when we go live. And then head over to patreon.com/hawkblogger and join the crew. Sign up, get immediate access to the Slack channel, and be part of the conversation that's going on there all the time. Thanks to everybody. Have a wonderful rest of your night. And as always, go Hawks.